Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a series of short discussions on various topics related to the Microsoft Cloud Platform. Your hosts, Cale Teeter, Evan Basilek, and Sujeet Mallow, discuss a specific topic on each show to give you a high-level overview of that topic, and resources to get more information should you wish to dig further. For more information on our show, please see our website at azpodcast.com. Well, welcome back to the Azure Podcast. We're now up to episode 27. The topic today is automation, which I got to say doesn't sound as sexy as the previous two topics that we've done, which is intelligent systems and notification help. But nonetheless, I think this is a topic that is important and near and dear to anyone who is managing an Azure infrastructure, a large Azure infrastructure. So I think it's worthwhile just spending a few minutes talking about this so our listeners are aware that this even exists. It was a little bit of a surprise to us that this stuff has finally made it into Azure, and I'm sure not everybody knows about this. Well, my name is Sujeet Mallow. I am a consultant with Microsoft in the app dev space based out of New Jersey. And today, Evan's off today. He had some stuff to do. He's in an offsite meeting, but I have my my friend and esteemed colleague Cale Teeter. Cale?
Hey, this is Cale. I'm an MCS consultant as well in the New York region. I'm doing app dev and Azure related things.
So Cale, you know we were just talking about this automation prior to starting the podcast, and this thing kind of sneaked up on me, at least. I didn't realize it was even available as a service until I happened to look at it when browsing the website one day.
Yeah, this is relatively new, and the other thing is it's still in preview form. So this isn't, you have to sign up for it, so you'll have to go under the normal procedure to sign up for your preview programs to even see this. For me, I saw the earlier stuff of it come with the web jobs. You probably saw that a couple months ago where
right.
That stuff started turning on. And those were like ways to, you know, run little command lines or little jobs, if you will, on websites and mobile services and things. But this is a lot more of a scalable solution that works for much larger scale than those types of things.
I'm glad you brought that up. So the web jobs, that still exists. It's not like this is superseding web jobs. That has its place.
Yeah, I would describe it the way I understand it is the web jobs is a lot more simple. So it's you have a command line tool that you want to run on a server that's maybe running your website too that does mm-hmm. something. You can pop that up there, no problem, a script or whatnot. This is a lot more structured for larger scale and, like I said, much more complex jobs. Maybe they need to run in parallel. Maybe they have to do a bunch of processing. It's just something that scales better, and there's a whole dashboard for it and things.
Okay, so let's kind of just talk about the problem that we're trying to solve over here. And the way I understand it is that if you're a serious Windows Azure user, I shouldn't say Windows Azure anymore, Microsoft Azure user, you probably have a fairly complex Azure architecture, right? You've got various cloud services, VPNs, databases, VMs, websites, et cetera, et cetera. And you need to do some sort of, processing on them on a regular basis. And today, if you don't have automation, you have to resort to writing, I guess, your own .NET application or PowerShell scripts that work against some of the REST endpoints and do all the stuff manually. Is this the kind of problem we're trying to solve here?
Yeah, it's for these the things that they want to target are more like the frequent or time-consuming tasks, things that are just, you know, keep the lights on that you need to do all the time, but you don't necessarily need an admin sitting down once a week spending an hour or two doing these things where you could just automate them, and hence the name automation. But really it's just about creating if you take a step back, where this evolved from a little bit was we have a on-premises product in System Center. So System Center is our further evolution of the system management server, which was basically managing client workstations as well as servers, you know, all types of things to keep them in these certain policies that meet your business needs, what things need to be turned on, all these different features. And you could automate other things with those, like scraping log files and doing those types of things. But they came along with another product called Orchestrator.
Mm-hmm.
So that's part of the System Center stack. And it's a component you can add, and what that does, you build these things called runbooks. So the runbook, I'm sure if people were in the enterprise, they've heard that term before, which is typically just a way of saying, okay, when we do this certain business process in the IT side, we follow these steps. We have this runbook that we run, and that's how we create a user. That's how we, you know, do a backup. That's how we do these certain different tests in IT. And you would build these runbooks, and that's what we did for years. Now you can build those in PowerShell.
Mm.
So if you can script it with PowerShell, which most of the things you can do now, you can build those things inside of these PowerShell scripts, and there's a framework around it that creates these runbooks. And then once you have the runbooks, you can run them on Orchestrator, but now you can take the same scripts, obviously depending on the servers that you're hitting. If you're going to hit a website server or a SQL database, they have certain APIs that are exposed to PowerShell, you know, mm-hmm. for you to manage stuff. So you just put that stuff up there. You bring your script up there. You schedule when you want it to run, and then you can just sit there and monitor. There's a dashboard for it. It can send you alerts and the whole nine yards with it.
I see. So you could you author these files, these runbook files, and then you submit them to automation, the Azure Automation to run. Is that how it works?
Yeah, think of it like Workflow Foundation Server, or Workflow Foundations that we had, where we could build the concept of this workflow, which was essentially the script, this runbook we're talking about, and then we submit it to an engine. The engine doesn't know anything about what's going on in there. It just knows, okay, this needs to run in parallel, this needs to run by itself, it needs to run on this day at this time, and it's like a scheduling engine that's just going to churn through those things.
Okay, that's a good analogy. So I've done some workflow programming before, and obviously in workflow you have this a workflow is made up of a XAML file which contains one or more activities, right? And those activities then can be, you could have things like looping activities and jump activities or some, as you said, parallel activities and things like that. And you just put that into a file, and anybody, any host that can understand the XAML file that you've created could potentially run that workflow. So it sounds like this is very similar, but it's using the PowerShell syntax instead of XAML, for example. And it is this automation knows how to process all the commands in that PowerShell script file.
Yeah, and the cool thing about it is if you know PowerShell, you know, like I said, there's APIs that are exposed for all of our products for PowerShell, PowerShell commandlets, they call them generally, libraries, for each one of our products that we have. But then what if you want to do something outside the box? Like, yeah, I want to do this thing with SQL Server, but there's no commandlet for that. I need to write my own commandlet. Well, if you know PowerShell, you can write whatever commandlet and still submit it to this, or even let's say you're a C# developer and you say the commandlet, I really can't do it in the confines of the way the commandlets work. Inside PowerShell, if people aren't aware of this, you can actually write C# and have the PowerShell parse the C# and build those objects and whatever you need on the fly. So you could do that too. So it's pretty open to extensibility.
That's nice. You don't even have to compile the C#. It's just in there, huh?
Yep.
That's pretty neat. So I guess, you know, a good question some people may ask is, so what's the value that automation, this sounds pretty cool, but what's the value that we're getting out of this? As you mentioned, this is in preview right now, but I think the price when it goes live soon, I think it's going to be about $20 a month, and you get about 10,000 minutes of processing for that $20, which is, I think, very good value for money. But what exactly are we, what is the value that we're getting out of this kind of service, besides being able to run these runbooks?
Yeah, I think the real value is, like you said, first off, it's relatively cheap. You know, we get this whole economies of scale by using Azure. If anybody's went through the process of setting up Orchestrator, it's quite involved and quite expensive, because every client that's going to be touched by that thing has to be licensed. Mm. And so this stuff up in Azure, like you said, it's measured in terms of minutes and those things, CPU time, as opposed to, you know, the per client or the per server license that we're used to. So you're going to get a big benefit there if you have a decent infrastructure up on the cloud. But on top of that, it's the value of, you know, being able to have things that are predictable. So we know that, like, when we're going to do the way we want to manage our servers up in Azure, whether it's backups, like I mentioned, log processing is a big one. Anything that you're going to do to manage your sites to keep them healthy and running.
Cleanup is a good one, I guess. Database cleanup jobs, things like that.
Definitely. Anything like that where we can build it predictably into these runbooks, so we know for sure we've QA'd it, it works, it runs, it's just like electricity. Once we get it up there, we just manage the alerts if anything happens for some reason. But on top of that, it's going to run by itself, so it's going to save tons of time for people that have to manage servers manually like that.
So I assume there's a way to schedule these jobs to run at a particular time. Right,
definitely.
These runbooks, and it sounds like from what I was reading earlier is that it's a very robust infrastructure, which is fail-safe. So if the runbook crashes, I believe it picks up where it left off when it comes back up, and so it sounds like it's got a lot of fail-safe mechanisms built into it, and it's also a very scalable architecture. It could handle a lot of runbooks at the same time if you need to run runbooks in parallel. So it sounds like there's a lot of value there.
Yeah, I think of it as, you know, you don't have to set up the server side. You're simply doing the side that matters, the business side of, here's how I need to manage my infrastructure. I don't need to worry about how to set up this workflow engine and how that thing's going to scale. That's taken care of for me. I just need to concentrate on what do I need to do to these servers to keep them running the best way they can.
Mm.
And
it seems like, so just to kind of delve one step deeper into some of the details and how this works, the runbook execution. So it looks like when you submit a runbook for execution, it goes into some sort of a database. I think there's an SMA database which has a list of all the runbooks. And then at the scheduled time, one of the worker servers will pick up this runbook from the database and it will process it. So it looks like it's got a nice architecture that, you know, they can just keep adding the number of worker servers to keep up with demand.
Yeah, and the other cool thing is once you get your scripts up there and they're running and you want to make some tweaks to them, you can do this stuff through the portal. So it's not a big drawn-out process to actually make changes to your commandlets once they're running up there to monitor them. There's an interface up there for you in the portal to manage these things.
Right, all your runbooks are listed in the portal, and that way you have a library that you build up over time. And can be shared by anybody within your company that has access to them. Having said that, though, I believe there's also a very good public repository, right, in Script Center?
Yep.
Of all the existing runbooks that Microsoft has created already.
Yeah, and there's a big community behind this. Like I said, don't be afraid if you are experimenting with this to even look over at the System Center Orchestrator scripts, because there's a lot of carryover between those two. So there's a big community behind building, you know, these things. So when you are building one, it might make sense to go out and see if somebody's already built it and just tweak it to your environment, you know.
Okay. And so the basic concept here, from what I'm understanding, Gail, is that a runbook contains a set of commands that can be executed on any server or service within Azure, correct?
Yeah, you would target the specific ones. I believe there's like parameters you can pass into your scripts in. So mm-hmm. It kind of keeps the parameters separate from the actual running of the script. Like you said, it's a generic script. And then you'll feed in the environment variables
right.
to make it do what you need to.
Like the server name or the URL or whatever it is
yep.
that you're working on.
Totally.
Very nice indeed. Well, I think that sounds like a real important thing for us. Anybody that's serious about Azure and has a lot of Azure assets out there, I think this is something they can certainly, and for $20 a month, I don't think it can go wrong anyways. I think it beats having to run, you know, your own server in your environment or, you know, spinning up a VM just so that you can run some script. Because I think that's what people do today, right? They probably have an extra VM running, lying around that they're running all the time, running these homemade batch files or scripts or PowerShell scripts. And really, that's error-prone, right? The scripts could crash. The VM can go down. You don't know if it's up and running. I think it's this predictability, as you say, that the automation service offers seems definitely worth the value there.
Yeah, and the other thing is, if you do work with this and you build up a library of scripts, they're backed up as well. So, like, you don't have to do anything for that. You upload your scripts, and once they're in Azure, they're replicated multiple times like everything else. And so you don't have to worry about losing your library over time, you know.
Very good. Well, anything else you want to add to this topic, Cale?
No, I think that's it. I think we'll see more as this thing gets out of preview and people start using it. Like I said, keep checking on the library, like you mentioned, Sajid, big community behind us, and I'm sure that'll just continue to grow. So,
okay, excellent. And just to start wrapping it up, then I believe Cale, you had a link in the show notes.
Yeah, actually, that was Evans. He sent that out internally this week, but it's public knowledge. It's the announcement that Microsoft Azure has a Brazil region now in public preview. So that's the first one in that region. Now there's a couple caveats. It's local redundant storage there now, so it'll copy it three times locally. If you're doing that, anything with storage in that data center, but if you do a geo redundant with it, it actually replicates to the southern US data center. So, just a couple things. I mean, the geo redundancy still works. Obviously, it's just not geo redundant inside of South America.
Okay. Wow, that's nice. I'm sure our customers and listeners in South America will be very happy to know there's something close to them now.
Yeah, I'm just I need to pull the map up here again. Where are we missing now? So we have South America, North America. We got a lot in Asia. I don't know. It's about Russia as much, maybe. But
how about the Pacific Rim? How are we doing in Australia?
Yeah, I don't believe there is one there. Maybe we should touch on that, and then maybe the next podcast we'll go over the regions and see where we're moving and what's going on.
Okay, great. Well, there's one more thing that I picked up on some of the DLs. It's related to Azure compliance. You know, I think Azure has to comply with a number of major certifications in different countries. Now I believe some of these names, I have to say that I don't know what they actually mean, but I think people would appreciate some of these certifications. ISO 27001, SOC 1 and 2, HIPAA, BA, DPA, EU, UK, G-Cloud, PCI, DSS, FedRAMP. I mean, you know, there's a lot of, I think Azure is really making great strides in making sure we're complying with all these major certifications around the world. So it's good to know they're moving in that direction there. Well, I think that's it. That's all I had. Cale, thanks so much for the discussion on Azure Automation today. I appreciate your insights.
Thank you, too. We'll see you guys later.
Take care.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any comments or questions, please use our Twitter handle at Azure Podcasts. Background music has been taken from ccmixter.org under the Creative Commons license. Thank you, and see you next time.